You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to our weekly Pirates chat. Andrew Destin here with Jason Mackey, who's reporting to you live from Southern California out in San Diego, coming off of yesterday, Monday night's game with the Pirates, of course, kind of blending both youth and veteran leadership, kind of leading the way. This is a team that, you know, we start off yesterday talking about what's the future of Mitch Keller, what's the future of David Bednar, are these guys who are on the move, and instead we're talking about first home run for Leover Peguero, first career win for Quinn Priester, just quite a 24 hours. How was that 24 hours for you, Jason?
Yeah, less than 24 hours, right? Like, right. You know, in the morning we're saying, oh, they're going to listen, they're going to listen. And I have my own feelings on that. The people follow me on Twitter probably saw. And I guess I can expound on them shortly, but that was a good one, man. I really thought that was an encouraging game from a Pirates standpoint. You saw a lot of stuff that if you're a Pirates fan, I think should be very encouraging to you. Not only Carlos Santana, I mean, that was the big storyline, but everything underneath it. Peguero, you mentioned it. Quinn Priester, how he bounced back. I was encouraged by that. Carmen Majinski. A couple other guys had hits. Like Henry Davis was the only one. I was waiting for it. Davis's last at bat, I'm like, if Davis gets a hit, it's Davis, Triolo, Gonzalez, Peguero. I forget the one. Andy Rodriguez had a single. Like that was going to be a clean sweep by their young guys, and they didn't do it. But to dial it back to the Heyman stuff, man, like that was, they're going to listen. They're going to listen on David Bednar and Mitch Keller. Okay, great. We know that. We know that because Ben Cherington has said since he's gotten here, it's his job to listen on everybody. So I tried to point that out, that it's not necessarily news. Now, the legitimacy of their listening, I suppose, is something. Like, are they listening with the intent to trade either of those guys? I highly doubt it. I really do, Andrew. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, and I don't want to hog the spotlight here, but I mean, they've wanted to be competitive this season. They've fallen short of that, fallen a 20-8 start. I know a lot of people in the organization are not happy with that. That's not a grand statement, but you're not going to get to your end any better, any quicker, any more efficiently by trading your two best players. Like, it's on them to listen, sure, but my goodness, does that not make sense?
Yeah. No, I agree with you in the sense of it would be one thing if we're having this conversation about Bednar and Keller and say, put those guys in the position the team was in 2021, right? If you're thinking, okay, right, we're 2-3 years away from actually being competitive. But if this plan or this project, whatever term you want to give it, if it goes according to said plan and next year is the actually competitive one that you were hopeful that this year would be closer to being, if next year is okay, roll the young guys out there, get more arms up here, whether that's Jared Jones, if Mike Burrows is healthy, like if you get these more arms back into the mix and you're able to compete in that regard and you feel good about who you got as position players, then why would you trade away a Keller? Why would you trade away a Bednar? Because it's not like they're expiring contracts. It's not like these are guys you lose club control over. That's what makes them coveted commodities, right? Because Bednar, you got a few years left. Keller, you got a few years left. Roll with them. See what you got. Now, if next year you find out, okay, this cast isn't what we thought it would be in terms of the arms, if the position players are coming up a little short, maybe we revisit that idea in 12 months' time. But for now, I see no urgency. There shouldn't be any urgency. You have to be so overwhelmed by any offer to move off of these guys, right?
Right, but to get the offer, you have to listen, which is why it's stupid to make something more of this than it is. Like, of course you're going to listen. Of course. Somebody might get desperate and pay something stupid for a closer. They might. It's highly unlikely, but it is possible. And if Charrington would get, like, I was on 93.7 The Fan, and Andrew Filippone threw out a hypothetical to me, which I never see this happening. But he said something, some package centered around two top 100 picks and one's in the top 50. I'm like, okay, if that package comes along, I'd be okay with that. But anything short of a deal where you can poke holes in it, or you say, why the heck did we trade David Bednar? Don't do it. Don't do it. They're not going to do it. Like, yes, next year was kind of the one where they had circled, we should be competitive. We should be good. And I don't know how to feel about that. You know, the post 20-8 start just hasn't been good. And, you know, last night was an encouraging game. So I think it's sort of dulled some of that frustration. And who knows, maybe they finish the season really strong and finish with a win total in the mid-70s. I'm starting, you know, I'm a fair bit skeptical of that at some point. I've maintained that I wasn't, but I mean, the wins just have not come. How do you deviate from that plan to the tune of trading those two guys? Because, and we'll talk about this too, like, I do think it makes sense to trade Santana. It makes sense to trade Hill. It makes this is a lost season. It makes sense to mortgage those assets into other things. And, you know, don't tell me, oh, these guys have had such a positive influence and you can't possibly remove them from the clubhouse. Look at where things have gone with those guys around. That's not to say they haven't helped, because they have. But what are we clinging to here? And I think, as last night demonstrated, at least with Carlos Santana, he can play. He's going to have value. He's going to go somewhere. I think Rich Hill starting tonight, he could have value. I think there's a chance they could trade Austin Hedges and G-Man Choi. I think they could get something for those guys. Probably not much. But again, if I'm Ben Charrington, I'm looking at guys on expiring contracts and completely fine getting whatever I can for them.
Yeah. And to that point, too, you bring up just on the Santana front of what he brought to the clubhouse presence earlier in the year. You know, this is not to, you know, point out anything to say, oh, there's no longer value. But, like, let's call a spade a spade. O'Neill Cruz has been hurt since April, and Rodolfo Castro is in AAA. Those were two guys that you go back to spring training, he was mentoring pretty closely. You know, so there's still some veteran leadership elements to the clubhouse, certainly. And that's with him, that's with Hill, that's with Hedges, that's with any of these guys. But, like, diminishing returns is the phrase that comes to mind with me, because it's like, well, there's only so much time left in the season. Some of these guys aren't even here anymore that they were projected to be key parts of the lineup, or at least we thought they had a potential to be that. Cruz isn't coming back for a month. Santana showed a hot bat yesterday and has played good defense all year. It's like, well, what are you sticking to, right?
I mean, O'Neill Cruz is a grown man. O'Neill Cruz is a dad. He's a husband. Like, he doesn't need somebody to hold his hand around the clubhouse. Like, he's fine. He needs a healthy ankle, and he needs to hit left-handers and hit off-speed pitching. And he started to – and play good defense. And he started to do that before he got hurt. You know, I think that stuff's important. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing to have a veteran around, and especially with the season that Cruz was walking into, where, you know, he didn't have a ton of experience. Anytime you have a young team collectively, it's nice to have some guys who have been there before, and that's what Santana did and brought, and he positively influenced other teams he's been on. But we're past that right now, really. I mean, the other input into the argument is what we're talking about. Is he going to fetch return? He's been the best defensive first baseman in baseball. You saw it last night with two various plays. He plays every day, keeps himself in great shape, hits from both sides of the plate. He's gotten to more power, kind of a slow start. He's had some weird dips to his season, but, you know, you brought this up maybe last week, Andrew, or maybe us talking privately. I know I expressed some doubts, like, is his numbers, are they good enough to get, you know, to get something there? And you're like, well, he got traded last year with much worse numbers. Like, that's a very good point. Very good point. So, yeah, I mean, he's improved over what he did last year. Seattle still could use him. I still think he wants the Mariners. I don't think that's the dumbest thing in the world. I think both parties would probably be really happy. And the Pirates last year for him with worse numbers, again, got – or not the Pirates, but the Kansas City Royals got two minor league pitchers. Like, I think the Pirates would be thrilled with that.
Yeah, absolutely. See what you get with them. And the same goes to, you know, G-Man Choi and Austin Hedges. If you trade each of them and get a low-level minor league pitcher who's, you know, high upside but maybe pretty far down the rungs and not highly perceived, it's like, just stockpile talent with these guys, right? Yep. They're expiring contracts. Why not give it a shot? So, I guess – go for it.
Like, I really do think they can trade Hedges. Did we talk about that? We might have talked about this last week, but I just, there's nothing I've seen that throws me off of that scent. Choi is probably the one, if I had to rank them, I would worry about the most. But if they keep playing him, 3 homers in his last 7 games, somebody could see that and I think really could take a chance on him. I don't love the salary. It's like 4.6 and some change, something like that. That might make it difficult. And I mean, Hedges is at 5, but this guy really has been a good defensive catcher. I know people don't want to hear that in Pittsburgh, but I don't care. If you have a better offensive team where his bat doesn't matter, and it, you know, clearly matters on this team because every spot you need to get something out of it. You also have 2 young guys you should be playing, but for a team that doesn't have to care about that stuff, there's some value there. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
No, you're good. And that goes to the point I was going to say. It's like totally in line with why Hedges should be perceived as probably a little bit higher of a trade chip than Choi. Just because with Choi, like, I mean, we know what he does defensively at first. That's quite in stark contrast to Carlos Santana. So that's pretty much you're only playing him at DH. You're only having him DH. And Hedges at least gives you that defensive versatility. With Choi, the concern there is, okay, this is a guy who missed close to 3 months with injury. The bat has heated up now, but it's a very small sample size. Like, he doesn't give you a lot on defense. You're pretty much banking on a team that wants to plug in a guy at least part-time at DH as a left-handed only bat who's never going to face left-handed pitching. I mean, I'm sure there's a market for that, but it can't be a big one. I got to believe that there's probably a bigger market for a defensive-minded catcher who at least is your backup, right? I mean,
yeah.
Am I wrong there, right?
I mean,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Look, they both have warts. We're not, let's be honest here. I mean, you know, Hedges can't hit. We've seen enough of that he's not going to add much offensively. But, you know, I've used the argument he caught for the Guardians last year and was very good for them. He didn't crush that team. Why all of a sudden is he crushing this one offensively? You know, there was all this outcry too about, why is Austin Hedges playing? It's so terrible. He's bringing down so many things. They've been the same team without him. You know, they really have. Like, they're just, there's not enough there in other areas. And we sort of knew that. But I don't think that makes him a bad defensive catcher. And, I mean, you can go onto Baseball Savant, and I did this, and look at some metrics that would paint Austin Hedges theoretically as the best defensive player in baseball. Now, I think that's crazy because I watched it with my own 2 eyes, and that's not a fair assessment. But is he better defensively than I think a lot of people want to give him credit for? Yes, I do. Fielding run value is a stat on there, and he is literally number one in Major League Baseball. If Ke'Bryan Hayes did that, or Carlos Santana did that, or Brian Reynolds, or any Pirate did that other than Austin Hedges, people would be on a crusade about get this guy a gold glove and all, you know, he's our defensive fill in the blank. And, you know, but with Austin Hedges, somebody's just going to make a remark about his batting average or how much they overvalue pitch framing, which I get it to a degree. Like, he's the wrong catcher for this team. He shouldn't be playing over Andy Rodriguez and Henry Davis. And they're doing themselves so many, the lack of, you know, whatever the opposite of favors is by the way they handled this situation. But again, it doesn't make Hedges a bad defensive player.
No, and it's funny you bring all that up because that kind of piques my interest of kind of asking you. I haven't even talked about this with you either on the show or away from it, just about what do you make of Andy Rodriguez now that we're, I think it's 7 games into the Rodriguez experiment behind the plate? I mean, I know everyone's talking about him gunning down Ha-Seong Kim last night, and that was a special play, but first 2 games, maybe there was some doubts, some mistakes he was making there behind the plate. What have you kind of seen there on the scene in Los Angeles and now in San Diego? What have you seen in terms of improvement from him?
I like it, man. I really do. I like it. I've seen improvement with him. His first game, he was setting up very early. And I think we talked about this and are already like he's handling that part of it better. I'm seeing how much work he's putting into the defensive side and learning about pitchers. I think we're seeing very noticeably how he interacts with them and handles the staff. I really like that. There was one game, what was it? The last game in Anaheim where he's gesturing. I'm going off memory at this point. May have been Jose Hernandez, but like the calm down kind of things. Yeah. He'll fire up with David Bednar. And he moves extremely well back there. And we've seen pass ball, a couple wild pitches, like whatever. I don't get riled up over that stuff. Like I want him to be making those mistakes. He's going to learn. He's a young kid. Like that's unfair. The arm, as you said, is real. That's been really impressive. Not that I had any doubt. It's been more accurate than I thought it would probably be. The bat, it's coming around. It's fine. Like Endy is everything that I thought he would be and how I thought he would fare. It's just, what categories have gone which way. I think this kid's going to be really good. And I think it's going to take just some getting used to the major league game. And we've seen that. I still don't understand why they're not catching Henry at all. Maybe they view him just as, and this might be worth asking at some point, like, is he just a right fielder? Is he just an outfielder? He's going to play every day. And that's what they'd rather see and leave the catching to Endy. I don't know, but that's the only part of this that I don't like or understand. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there in the same camp with you and a lot of that about Endy. I kind of want to dovetail off the point you made there about Henry, because I'm with you in the sense of, okay, well, what's the plan here in terms of him with catching? But I would enjoy, for the Pirates' sake, that it would be foolish, I think, to move him off anywhere besides right field. And that's not to say that he's, lit the world on fire there, but you and I have talked about this. His best tool defensively is probably the arm, right? Yep. It's, he has a cannon for an arm. And I've seen people talk about, well, maybe they need to, over the winter, they need to move him to first base because, and that's the reason I bring this up is because we're talking about, moving Carlos Santana, moving G-Man Choi. Like, what do you do about that first base hole? You and I have talked about if that's Jared Triolo's spot when Ke'Bryan Hayes come back. Like, how do the Pirates handle first base? And to me, I think it would be such a disservice to put Henry there. I mean, mate, I could see them doing it. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but to me, if Henry is not a catcher, which the franchise has essentially said just based off of his 30 plus games here in the big leagues, like you have to see what you have with him in terms of right field, because otherwise you're wasting an arm, right? And you're wasting it even more so if that's as a designated hitter, which could also be in his future. But to me, if he's not catching, he's got to be showing off the arm somewhere. I feel like it has to be right field, and I'd be, pretty surprised, or I guess it wouldn't be my plan if they were to put him at first or really hone in on him just being a DH.
Where did the first base stuff come from? Why are we putting Henry Davis at first base?
Well, somebody's got to go to first base, right, Jason?
Yeah, but why are we putting him there? Why is he in third position? Somebody is out there, and I thought for a second it was you, and maybe it's not. Somebody is out there talking about Henry Davis at first base because I keep getting asked about it. It's and I don't me. Understand it.
I'm not putting it out you. There. I'm gladly not putting it out there. Oh, man.
I don't understand that. I don't. He hasn't taken a ground ball. I've never seen Henry Davis take a ground. I've never seen him work at first base. I mean, maybe he has and I missed it. Maybe he has and I wasn't around. I don't know. But I've never seen the guy work at first base. I think if you put him in right field and you give him time and have some patience, I think he's going to be fine. Like the amount of things that this guy was motivated to do and hasn't done is very small. I don't know if there's any, like anything that he's ever put his mind to, I'm not sure he hasn't eventually figured it out. He'll get there. It's incredibly harsh. And I'm guilty of this. I think we all are of, pointing out like mistakes he made in right field. He's played the position for 15 minutes. He's going to make mistakes. And if you watch the mistakes he makes, they're all nuanced to outfield. How does a ball go off the wall? Where do you position yourself? Picking the ball up on a ground ball and trying to throw quickly, transferring to your throwing hand. Like, he doesn't make mistakes because he's like loafing or not plugged in mentally or something. It's just literally because the position is brand new to him. And I wouldn't unplug that and just all of a sudden throw him over at first base. I also hate the idea of putting someone at first base with one of the probably two best arms of any position player on the team. I hear O'Neill Cruz going to first base, you know, speculation surrounding that. And I push back the same way. This doesn't make sense to me. I also wouldn't take that away from O'Neill because he's worked really hard on his defense. But with Henry, the only other position I would see him moving to or would want to see him move to is catcher. Now, I want to see what he can do back there. If he stinks, let him stink. I mean, he's not going to ruin the World Series chase. I guarantee you that. I feel like that's an easier conversation. Like, if you give me a chance to try something, maybe it's in journalism or whatever, and I can't get the job done, and I'm insistent that I can, but then I do it and then I stink at it, boy, I'm going to shut up then, right? Not that Henry's chirping in anybody's ear. It's just, sure. You know, it's a lot easier to understand if you're given a chance to try something and you can't do it.
Right. And just a final point on that one too, would be like, let's fast forward to past the trade deadline or past, you know, into the 2024 season. If they decide, okay, we're going to not give Henry those reps and instead keep having him play out right field, which I suppose is fine. Like, what's your plan for what's your catching tandem, right? Like, is it Jason DeLay again? Which if it is, that's okay. It's just like,
it's fine. If Jason DeLay is your backup, whatever.
Yeah. But it's that's the conversation, right? You have to decide for yourself, do we want to do this master plan of if there's seven games in a week, Endy catches five of them and Henry two, or is it Endy's catching five, DeLay's catching two, and Henry's a right fielder full time, and you've basically said you've closed the door on that chapter, right?
Right.
So I think that's the intriguing part of what happens.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, Andrew. I don't think there's anything. If that's what it turns out, so be it.
Yeah. It's more so just stay tuned, I guess, for the next week. What happens after the trade deadline? If Hedges gets moved, if he does, then we'll find out really soon. But if not, then I guess we're kind of waiting in limbo. But
I think there's too much stock put into who plays first base. I do. Yeah. I think there are guys you can put there if you want. I think right now we'd probably both agree that Endy hasn't done anything to be moved off the catching position. But if he does, if that doesn't go well, first base is an option for him. I think Jared Triolo can move over there very easily. I'm not punting on Malcolm Nunez as a prospect. He's working his way back from a shoulder impingement. If he gets back to AAA and starts hitting, he's going to get an opportunity. You can find a place to put somebody, man. You really can. You can teach him how to play first base. I'm not that worried about it. So, you know, and worst comes to worst, maybe they sign somebody. You know, that's a good time to get a veteran who's going to add some pop into your lineup, and they can figure it out that way. But I would much rather get Henry Davis in a spot where he can be Henry Davis than try to shoehorn in something because of need at that position.
Yeah. Well, lots to talk about on those young guys of what we're going to see after the trade deadline or even just in the foreseeable future of what we're going to get from them. Before we head off here, I guess that kind of segues into this next topic of performances that we need to see improve after the break. And they're bringing that up just in the sense of, you know, what the composition of this team is going to look like after the deadline. Obviously, there's a lot in flux just based on the guys that we've talked about. But with some of the constants that we know, the ones who are pretty much all but guaranteed to stay here in Pittsburgh, whether that's a Jack Suwinski, Brian Reynolds, Ke'Bryan Hayes, theoretically, like some of these, you know, obviously banged up. But those names that kind of come to mind, the constants who are here in Pittsburgh, what are you kind of looking for? What are some things that pique your interest, Jason?
Yes, 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 and yes on the performances that – No, well, okay. I shouldn't say Suwinski needs to improve. I wish they would use Jack a little bit differently, but they need to see Ke'Bryan Hayes back healthy and productive. That hasn't been good enough. I do get the sense that he's going to be back this season and be back rather soon. I know I talked to him the last day before we went out on the road, and I mean, dude's dripping with sweat, like eager to get back. Doing a lot of stuff to try to get back. The back issue, frankly, concerns me a little bit, but I do think he'll be back. Brian Reynolds talked to him in Anaheim about some of his troubles. I wrote that piece, and I don't totally understand it, Andrew. I really don't. And, you know, guys hitting the ball hard. He's not chasing, making a good amount of contact. Hasn't hit the fastball as well as he typically does. He's been kind of BABIPed into not-so-good territory. I do think, and I said this to Brian, that he homer net a couple hit, like his at bats have been better, that I think it's going to turn around in short order, and I really do. So that's something probably the most concerning for me at this point has been Mitch Keller. I think 5.51 ERA over his past 11 if memory serves, and I definitely want to see him get back to the way he was. don't love the pitch mix, like getting away from softer stuff, going too heavy. Like there needs to be a little bit more of an even split there. And the last one is just Jack Sawinski. Before I turn this over to you, I want to hear what you have to say about it as well. I think Jack should be playing every day. I'd like to see Jack play every day. They tend to sit him against lefties. I get that, I think, but sooner or later you need to just take the training wheels off and let the kid go and see what he can do. I think he's earned it. Like, he's done enough writ large on his season that, like, I can say, you know what, man, just hit everybody. Hit everybody from here until the end of the season. We'll see where the splits fall and we'll reevaluate it then. But guy's got what, 21 homers?
Yep.
A ton of power. Like, I think you just need to let him play every day, is my opinion.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a couple more I'd like to get into as well. But just on the Sawinski talk, too, there's also the point of, hey, he's a above average defender in center, which we were, you know, a little bit skeptical of maybe in March or beginning of April when they were kind of switching over the reins between him and Brian. That's gone well. So when you take him out of the lineup, that also impacts your defense, because now it's Brian Reynolds in center, or, you know, because you no longer have Josh Palacios here, right? Like, you're mixing and matching a little bit more. Your outfield defense takes a turn for the worse. Like, I think that's worth bringing up as well, is that if Sawinski can just provide you adequate offense, which maybe it's not above average like it is against righties, that's still beneficial because he's in center and he's played a very good center field this year. But I guess on that point too, I'm curious, what do you have with Connor Joe? Because, I mean, we saw in April what he gave you. Yeah. I don't know if he's a keeper guy. Is this somebody that you think is part of your future? Is he? I know he's club controllable for the next few years, but the way he's kind of fallen off after that strong start, that kind of comes to mind with me. You know, what do you have with him? And then what do you have with the rotation at large? I think this is a really important stretch. Johan's been sticking in the rotation all year. I'm not saying he's getting pulled out or anything like that, but I bring that up because this is a chance for him to really cement himself as, hey, I'm deserving of a spot in the rotation come spring training 2024. There are guys who are going to be coming back from injuries. Rowe could very well figure himself out. Luis could figure himself out if he, you know, doesn't go into some bullpen role or something like that, which I personally think he might be better suited for. But, like, also that rotation is going to get a lot more crowded really soon. So this is an opportunity for Oviedo to really cement things. And I guess on that note is, do we see Contreras again at some point in the next 60 games? Do we see Ortiz come back up? I'm not convinced of that, but if they do, that's a huge opportunity for them as well. So not guys currently on the MLB roster, but with Joe, I'm curious what you get there in terms of the rest of the year, because this is an opportunity. Otherwise, you could see the team go out and get some more outfield help over the offseason, or turn to some more young guys down the stretch here. And I think the rotation is still very much a big question outside of just Mitch and, you know, if Rich ends up staying here or not.
Yeah, that's completely fair. And I don't know what to make of Connor Joe, Andrew. I mean, I don't dislike having him on the roster. I think Connor Joe's a solid player. He's a very nice man. I think there's a possibility that he could be dealt, not for anything major, but I think another team could maybe see that and see if we give him a little bit more playing time, what he can produce. I think it helps his value that he's able to play first base, both corner outfield spots. He doesn't do anything stupid. You know, he's going to give you a professional bat, professional time in the field. I like that. He's a no-nonsense type of personality in the clubhouse. Like, you know, well-liked by everybody. There's no issues there. He works cheap, that whole deal. So, I mean, maybe somebody sees him as a depth improvement, hits left-handers well. That would be something. But, you know, does he fit into their future? I don't necessarily see that. You know, it's going to be Reynolds, Sawinski, Henry at this point in the outfield, is based on what I've seen. And, you know, you've still got some outfielders at AAA. You may have guys that you're trying to shoehorn and find a position for. Maybe one of them goes out there as well into more of a rotation. I don't know. But, you know, I think ideally you'd probably like Andrew McCutchen to play out there. I think that was their intent, for him to play more outfield. And then at that point, you're having Connor Joe here as the fifth outfielder. So I don't see a clear path. It's not like I'm going to DFA Connor Joe. I don't think he's at minimum an extremely valuable bench player. But yeah, somebody maybe they could keep around for that reason. Rotation wise, I have some questions. Certainly, I think anybody should have some questions. I do see Oviedo as part of this thing. I like him a lot. I like his mentality. I like his repertoire. He's learning. I think he's a very mature guy. He comes off as very mature. He handles himself by and large very well. And I think we forget that he's still kind of young too. And, you know, let him do what he's doing and grow the way he's growing. And he can look dominant one outing and then not so much the next. And I just think you got to kind of live with it as he grows up a little bit. But I'm not punting on that at all. I think Ortiz goes into a bullpen role. I agree with you there. I just two-pitch guy, his velocity. I want him to just rip it. I want him to throw 100 sinker slide, or not. I'd actually prefer the four-seamer, but, you know, whatever gets him comfortable, I'm good with it. And then, yes, I think we do see Rowe this season. I think he fixes it. I still see Rowanzi as an important part of the rotation. I really do. And I think, you know, next year, maybe at this time, you should be looking at Keller, Skeens, Priester, Rowanzi, Oviedo. If that's your rotation, maybe you add somebody. I think Burrows could be in there at that point. Maybe Brubaker, I don't know. But, I mean, they should theoretically have more options.
Yeah, it's a lot to stay tuned for. And it's a lot of arms entering back into the fold. It's a lot to keep tabs on. And, there's certainly worth monitoring just ahead of the deadline. But there's stories after August 1st that are maybe more worth keeping up with than the record would initially show. But lots to talk about here in Pirates Land. Anything we're forgetting, Jason, or do I let you get back out to the California sun?
Back out to the California sun. Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're good. Cool. I got to go enjoy some breakfast in San Diego somewhere, Andrew.
Well, say hi to the Marine Lair.
Time differences. What's that?
I was going to say hi to the Marine Lair for me. I see it outside your window, a little fogged up right now.
Yes, sir. I love awesome. This place.
It's the best. Well, that's all the time that we have for today's breakdown of latest in Pirates baseball. Be sure to hit the like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and stay updated with our latest content. If you haven't already, check out the subscription deal in the description. $6, 6 months of access. There's plenty of sports news to keep up with, and you don't want to miss it. Thanks for your time, and we will see you all next time.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you liked the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you enjoyed it on Apple Podcasts, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down in the description.